You're listening to the CLE Foodcast with Lisa Sands, the place for delicious conversation on local food and the people who grow, cook, and share it. Here's Lisa.
This week's episode takes us on a culinary journey to our neighbors to the north without leaving the North Coast. Banter is back at home in Gordon Square, and with it, their signature item, poutine. Something I realized as I was talking to friends and acquaintances about this episode, not everyone knows what poutine is. So let me get you really excited right now if you don't know. Traditional Canadian poutine is a bowl of thick-cut, crispy, double-fried potatoes. So like basically really good French fries with a hearty brown gravy and cheese curds. But at Banter, owner Matt Stipe is taking all kinds of liberties, like paprikash poutine and poutine with chicken shawarma, mushrooms, or even duck confit. Plus, they've got so many sausages, burgers, corn dogs, and whatever else they feel like slinging. This episode is presented with support from Ashtabula County Visitors Bureau. Did you know that Ohio has an ice wine scene? Well, now you do, and I'll be visiting Ashtabula County to check out Ohio's Ice Wine Trail and the Grand River Valley Ice Wine Festival. All through March, you can head east to visit lots of wineries and taste a variety of sweet and decadent ice wines from some of Ohio's most established wineries. Get started at visitashtabulacounty.com and make a plan to visit for pairings, entertainment, learning, and so much late winter fun. Again, you should definitely make your first stop to visitashtabulacounty.com. So poutine is sometimes called the national food of Canada, and while I can't attest to that personally, it is a perfect food to warm you from the inside out. What better canvas for creativity than the lowly French fry? It literally goes with everything. All right, let's talk to Matt, the owner of Cleveland's only poutinery, and we'll find out how poutine crossed the lake and landed in Gordon Square. I'm here at Banter in Gordon Square on a sunny President's Day Monday, and I have already admitted that I've never had poutine. So, Matt, how are you today?
Doing wonderful. That sunshine is feeling very good today, for sure.
Oh my gosh, it changes everything. Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, I was on vacation somewhere tropical. We were talking about tropical visits and sloths and things earlier. And the thing that I mean, obviously I like the warm temperatures, but the thing that I miss the most are the colors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the blue, the greens, the sand, the tropical flowers, all of that stuff that we don't get here at this time of year in Cleveland. But what we do have for wintertime in Cleveland is the return of Banter and poutine. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. I mean, I do have to say that poutine is good year-round, but typically during the wintertime is prime time poutine time.
Yeah, we don't want to put poutine in a corner and make it just this winter thing, because that would be bad, because we actually have 5 or 6 months of fantastic weather here, when I would imagine a cold beer and some poutine on a patio is perfect.
There are many, many opportunities and times in which poutine is the perfect match to whatever your life experience at that moment is.
So. I love it. Well, few openings or reopenings have had the collective excitement of Clevelanders as Banter, the place known for, as we were just saying, poutine, but also so much more. So it has to feel great to finally have brought this location, this West Side location, back into public consciousness, because I don't think anyone ever forgot about it. So tell me a little bit about that journey to bring it back after, I guess, the COVID years.
Yeah, you know, we made a promise when we decided to close during COVID that we were going to be back. If you spoke to anyone in the restaurant business, that timeline isn't always exactly as perfect as you would hope. And that was definitely the case with us. You know, our situation was, in terms of closing, was maybe a little bit more unique than some others during the COVID period. Actually, the day in March when the state shut down everything, my partners and I were actually meeting that day to discuss the possibility of moving locations and things of that matter. And then very quickly, we just kind of got the sense of, okay, let's table it for another day or two. And then obviously everything shut down. And then, so we were always in a unique position where our lease was coming up at the roughly about October of 2020. So that first winter of COVID was going to be very scary for a lot of restaurateurs, and a lot of restaurants went under that year or the year after. And we were in a unique position in which we could make a conscious choice of, okay, let's just pause operations. We were already thinking about a new location anyway. How about we just go about that and then just promise our wonderful clientele and regulars that we were going to be back at some point. And that's what we did. It just took 3 years longer than expected. So,
wow. Well, what kinds of things were you doing during that time? You obviously had a little bit of momentum. You ended up opening the second, quite different location at the Van Aken District. So tell me a little bit about, you know, how you use those, the quiet times that we were all forced to endure during COVID. How did you sort of ponder your relaunch?
So the Van Aken District actually did keep us quite busy during the pandemic. I think that the people, you know, the families of the Heights area and Beechwood and whatnot felt very comfortable. If you've ever been to that location, it's a little bit more open. You know, it was very easy to get takeout very quick, things like that. So actually, the community for the, you know, the first couple years of COVID really embraced us. And we actually did extremely well during that time. I would say that really a bit of the timing of our reopening really kind of came from myself and my two partners at the time. We wanted to take just a little step back for the first few months, get through that, you know, kind of the Christmas time, and then reevaluate all of our own goals within the business and what our goals with our family and professionally going forward. Actually, one of my partners, Tom Owen, decided to actually leave the business at that time for personal reasons. He's actually become a nurse and is very happy, you know, kind of with the transition out. And we all kind of had that opportunity to, okay, who wanted to be in, who wanted to be out, or even if we do continue. So my other partner, Adam Gullett, who has now left, him and I decided, okay, let's do this. We're going to, you know, get rolling. So that really took maybe even close to a year to kind of figure out, okay, can we do, you know, the new project? What is that going to look like? What does our relationship look like? What do we need and all that? So there was really almost a year of transition of, and also still in the midst of COVID and not knowing quite how the restaurant world would recover from it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once we felt confident and things were good on the east side, you know, we put our full energy towards reopening the west side Banter. There's a lot of different reasons why things take a long time, either finding the right location, you know, make sure that you get all your financing kind of set up, project delays. You know, there are a large number of things. And I don't know any restaurant that's ever opened up on time. But the one thing that I have learned opening up quite a few restaurants for ourselves and for others is that generally once you open, people don't remember how long it took you to get there. They're just happy that you're back.
Right. Well, you know, a little something about opening places and building a neighborhood. Your previous work, you've done a lot of things. You've lived in some different cities, but you worked with Sam McNulty and helped him or helped that team open a number of West 25th spots, which those became mainstays, you know, really a crux of a neighborhood, right? They were the little nuggets that started everything else. So when you were thinking about reopening Banter, what were you looking for in a location?
I like to say that we went out on a date with a few other neighborhoods around Cleveland. You know, we were just kind of getting our foot wet, getting, you know, our feet wet, getting back into the swing of things and trying to see what really made sense for sort of the evolution of Banter. I think each opening and reopening during COVID, it kind of has allowed us to not necessarily reinvent, but to continue to evolve the concept, as not only does like Banter need to evolve, but as the restaurant scene evolves, as Cleveland evolves. So we've kind of had a unique opportunity to be able to do that. Gordon Square is our home. And even though, yes, we went out on a couple dates with some other neighborhoods, this was the right place. That's for a lot of different reasons. It's really not, it kind of comes down to the community here. And I think also the other really wonderful, you know, parts of the neighborhood. So not only, I mean, I could talk for the next hour how wonderful our regulars are and how much, you know, they've embraced and sustained us. And even with our reopening, how many people every night that I'm like, oh my God, I haven't seen you in three or or 4 years, oh, this is so wonderful, and they're re-embracing us again. But it's even just the complimentary sort of grouping of restaurants and different theaters mm-hmm. and different art installations and all those kind of things that I think makes Gordon Square unlike any other neighborhood. When I describe the neighborhood to other people, I find that there's not more than just one thing, or there's not, you know, everything is very unique in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a pinball shop, there's the Capitol Theater, obviously there's Astoria's Happy Dog. So there's all these very, very unique concepts that all work in harmony with each other and complement each other. And you can't say that about any other neighborhood here in Cleveland.
As I was saying, we live in Brecksville. We drive up here and look for, you know, two or three experiences at a time. And I love that you can do that in this neighborhood. And over time, I feel like, much like what you just described, the owners, they're very invested in this neighborhood. They're very 100%. Proud to be mm-hmm. here. Yeah, I love the way you said that. Something that you just said struck me, that you have regulars, which makes perfect sense to me. And also I'm jealous because I'm thinking to myself, like, I would love to be a regular at a place where I could go get poutine. And I do not have that right now. So let's talk a little bit about the food and the elements of the food. Why poutine? I know that the concept of Banter now goes back, what, close to 10 years, really?
Yeah, 2015 we opened, in late 2015, but obviously we were working on that concept for a year or two prior to that as well.
And what was it about poutine? What was the aha moment when you said, I love this item, or no one's doing it, or, you know, I'm just so curious about the origins of why poutine for Banter.
Sure. It was maybe less aha and more like why not kind of moment. Maybe to just kind of take a step back. My partner, Tom Owen, and I had actually worked together at Market Garden. That's where we met. And originally it was just us. Adam also worked with us at Market Garden and Beer Market. And he came a few months after, kind of joined our team. But when Tom and I were originally talking about it, we didn't know, but we were both independently working on a bottle shop idea ourselves. So we just wanted to own like a beer and wine store that really wasn't anywhere on the near west side. There were a lot of corner stores and things like that, but it's, you know, you go in and just kind of pick up a quick six pack, and there wasn't really any knowledge, or the selection wasn't as good, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's definitely improved since, you know, then, and since we've opened. Mm-hmm. We quickly realized that we didn't necessarily want to do just a straight beer and wine store, that we wanted to offer just even a little bit of food. And it just kind of kept on evolving into, okay, why don't we make something very distinct for Cleveland, where you kind of have this combination full service restaurant, but beer and wine store as well in the same spot. So when Tom and I started talking about cuisines, you know, there were many different routes that we could have gone. You know, I had brought to the table the idea of doing these house-made sausage sandwiches. Tom and I had both previously worked in Chicago, and there was a place called, the name escapes me now, Hot Doug's. And they were known, they had a line out the door every day of the week, and they were doing antelope sausage, and they were doing wild boar, and all these really crazy, unbelievably outrageous but delicious sausages. So we took a little bit of inspiration from that in terms of the sausages. And then Tom's a big hockey guy, and so he loves going to Canada.
There's
I love Canada.
Yeah, there's the Canada connection.
Absolutely. So, you know, I don't think I had actually had it prior to us opening, or, you know, kind of researching. And you'd seen it pop up in a few like gastro pubs around town. So you would see like one. But in the same vein, there were a lot of restaurants that were opening up that were maybe item specific, meaning, oh, they have 12 or 13 of a particular item. You look at a place like Melt that mm-hmm. concentrated on grilled cheese, but there'd be a mac and cheese place or whatever. So that was sort of those combination of things kind of led us to poutine and the sausages. The reason why I always felt that poutine was going to work is, I mean, I always say it's the national dish of Canada. I don't know if that's official or not, but the sensibilities are the same, you know, here in Cleveland as they are in many parts of Canada. The weather, people, everything, it just made sense that why 30 miles south over Lake Erie would it not work here in Cleveland? And obviously it has.
I think that if the story was that poutine actually started in Cleveland, everybody would believe it. It feels very Clevelandy,
yeah.
You know, especially when you combine it with, as on your menu, you get really creative. So, and here's the thing. Yes, poutine may have been on other menus, but like brown gravy and a sprinkling of cheese on fries does not a poutine make, right? There's
correct.
A little bit more to it, and I feel like you've brought that more authenticity to it while also being playful and having some fun with variations.
I've seen poutines where it's, they call it a poutine on the menu, but it's just french fries with like just cheddar cheese, and then they maybe throw like bacon on it, or they'll throw chili or something like that on it and call it poutine, which is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are three main ingredients. You know, cheese curds, french fries, and then obviously the gravy component to it. But what nobody was doing, and what we kind of saw on a very epic boys trip to Canada, was we picked up quite a few things that we felt that would work in our favor. Like, if you go to Canada, there are poutineries around, mm-hmm. but it's usually, you know, at least my impression was more kind of late night drunk food, which that's definitely here at Banter too. So, we've all been there before. But I think that a lot of it was maybe cheaper ingredients or maybe not homemade. So, you know, so we just took certain steps to elevate what poutine was. We do our french fries pommes frites style. So we cook them fresh one day. We put them in the cooler overnight. And then we recook them a second time the next day. It still has a little bit of fluffiness in the inside, but the outside is much crispier. That's just a mm-hmm. superior french fry, in my opinion. You know, that's one step. We make our gravy in-house every day. We get stock from our friends and partners at Ohio City Provisions.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, so they're making the stock. We used to make it in-house. We go through too much now. They also have all the bones and things like that. So we just make a better quality gravy. But really, I think it's also what has made us stand apart from just your routine poutinery is just sort of the inventiveness that we've done. You know, we have the Forest City poutine, which uses five different mushrooms, wild mushrooms in it. We have the chicken paprikash poutine, actually it was a former employee's like grandmother's recipe. We have spetzel and everything else in that, and those were all the old recipes. We've just introduced a duck leg poutine. Honestly, even there's some that are maybe more approachable that are super popular, like our chicken bacon ranch. But just using better quality ingredients, just a better sort of culinary touch to it, I think has really not only made us stand apart and made us very distinct, but has allowed a bit of longevity in our restaurant too, mm-hmm. as well.
And what's the significance or the quality of the cheese curds than, again, just a sprinkling of any old cheese? Cheese curds themselves are pretty unique and have their own special qualities. Are curds on most of your poutines?
Curds are on every poutine, but we actually do allow people to substitute tofu if you want to go vegan with some of the dishes as well. So unless it's your choice, curds are on every poutine. I was a brewer for a little bit, and it's amazing how each individual ingredient, even though like in brewing, there's hops, there's malted barley, there's water, and it's amazing how such a simple ingredient like water, like you would think that it wouldn't make that much of a difference. And I look at cheese curds in the same way. Not every cheese curd is made the same. We've gone through probably four or five different types of cheese curds. The one distinct difference is that in Canada, you can just go to the dairy that day and they get fresh cheese curds daily or every other day. That is through, you know, kind of laws, USDA laws. Mm-hmm. We're not able to do that.
Right.
So the one big difference between our curds that and any curds that you're going to find in the U.S. and Canada is they always describe about the squeak.
Yes.
There's a squeak to the cheese curds. And we've gotten as close to the squeaky curds as we possibly can through the different tasting and different. We actually work with Middlefield
sure.
cheese. So
yep.
And they make. I mean, they've changed the recipe and made it for us, and we get it within a week or so. So it's still very fresh and very good, and it does have just a little bit of squeak. The other misconception is that there people think, oh, it's cheese, so it's supposed to be melty. No, there's supposed to be like a little bit of firmness, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit of meltiness, but it's not supposed to be like nachos on top of on top of French fries.
Yeah, just like a lot of other foods, we sort of bastardize everything as Americans. We
yeah.
take it and then we make it our own, and then we think that's how it's always been.
100%.
We like you know, I don't want to use the word appropriate it, but that's what we do. It's like with nachos or burritos or anything else. Like, you know, you're not going to Chipotle in a Latin country. It's just not the thing, you
yeah.
know? Yeah, we do it to ourselves. I was doing some research on poutine and also like just went down the rabbit hole of poutineries on Instagram and mostly in Canada. And I think that it's worth talking about the word and the origins of it, which like a lot of things also can be a little bit murky. There's different pronunciations of it. Some people say that it's come from a Quebec slang word for mess. Some people say its origins are a word that's closer to pudding. Do you believe any of those stories, or is there one storyline that you at Banter like to say, here's the origin of poutine?
Well, I don't want to upset any of our neighbors to the north, so I try to stay out of such arguments. The way that I look at it as, it's sort of like the origin of, you know, the buffalo wing or even like the nacho or whatever. There are so many different versions of that.
True.
I adhere, and I don't remember the exact story, but, you know, that there was basically it was sort of made as a mistake, or there were sort of leftover ingredients and it was sort of put together.
Right.
And that's as far as we go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
or some guy walked in off the street and was like, "I'm in a hurry. I need a hearty meal." It's like the creation of the sandwich.
Yeah, yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
So, you know, we are aware that if you're in Quebec or you know some French-speaking portion of Canada, that it's more poutine rather than poutine.
Right.
We actually used to have a poutine on the menu called Vladimir Putin. Poutine.
Probably but taking that off right
we
now.
We took that off. It's still on the menu, but we renamed it. So yeah, you know, it's like the gyro and euro and all, you know, so we just go with poutine.
Yeah.
I will say that we've had many, many, many Canadians come through Cleveland, and I don't think we've had anyone disappointed. I think it's usually the cheese curds that they notice, but, you know, sometimes it's like, well, it's not like my favorite whatever in my small hometown or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone is blown away typically at the quality of the poutine that they get, you know, over the border.
Mm-hmm. I liked also that you said Quebec because I said Quebec, and I think that that is actually technically wrong. The other thing is, you mentioned Putin, how it's pronounced sometimes as Putin. Do you know the story about the restaurant in France that had a lot of social backlash over their Putin?
I don't think I've heard this story.
Yeah, now. Yeah. It was a little bit ago. It wasn't related to current world events, but it's called. I did take a year of some French. We were in France last year, and Troy, my husband, who's sitting here doing sound today, really was the heavy on the French speaking. But La Maison de la Poutine, yeah. Okay, so that's the House of Poutine in France. They had to post on their social accounts because they started to be accused of being Putin sympathizers,
yeah.
Et cetera, which again is just the ridiculousness and the passion that I guess is human nature and that social media seems to bring out in all of us. But I thought it was a funny story and I wouldn't have mentioned it. I was thinking about not mentioning it until you said that.
Yeah, we, I think, waited one day after the Ukraine invasion to change it. So it was a very quick, fortunately, no backlash or anything like that. I wouldn't say that we were ever, you know, we ever did it in honor of him. I think it was more we just really love a pun or a turn of phrase.
Right.
So that's why we had it on the
Of course.
Menu,
so. Well, the important thing is it's called something else now.
Correct.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about some of your other varieties. I know it's a big menu. It's probably hard to remember. You sometimes do special features. You said that the duck leg one was kind of new. Anything you're playing with or developing right now that, you know, will something around, dare I say, St. Patrick's Day come forth, be translated into poutine or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say that there's no holiday or cuisine that's sort of off limits. I, you know, surprisingly, I think that actually so many flavors work well, you know, with potatoes and gravy and things like that. And sometimes, you know, there are on occasion, maybe we don't do a gravy or something and we kind of tweak it a little bit. There's definitely seasonality to a lot of it. We might not, outside of new specials, you know, the fact that we've actually now introduced, we have a chicken shawarma that's on the menu, the duck leg as well. Reopening has sort of allowed us to get a little bit more unique and whimsical with some of the dishes. I would say that, you know, one of my favorites that we do, you know, sometimes we like to just put out one that just seems so silly, but we know that's going to taste so good. So
yeah.
One of my favorites that we always do is the Arby's poutine.
Oh.
So we actually do We do curly fries, which we don't ever normally have. We bring in curly fries. We do the roast beef. We make our own our Arby sauce and horsey sauce and then crispy onions on top. That's always a favorite. During Lent, usually we do it one or two times during Lent. We do a lobster Lent as well. So everyone's doing fish fries, mm-hmm. which we do as well. Mm-hmm. But we do basically like a lobster poutine. In the springtime, we do a soft shell crab poutine wow. as well. And all those flavors really, really work well with poutine. And honestly, our specials sell unbelievably well. You know, we've done stuff for Diwali Day, and I'm trying to think of, you know, like all just the really great. We have partnered with other local restaurants. We've done a maple bacon donut poutine.
Amazing.
With brew nuts.
Yep.
And that is so freaking good. Honestly, it's like that sweetness with the richness of the gravy actually works really, really well. So on occasion, maybe we have to reflect and be like, okay, maybe that's a little bit too far. But honestly, it's, if the flavors work, the flavors work.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like Happy Dog, right? I mean, everything. If you like it, have at it, right? I mean, don't yuck somebody else's yum. But you know, maybe stop it before you put like Fruity Pebbles on it. But
correct. Hey, we haven't gone quite that.
Who am I to judge? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here hearing these combinations and thinking like, wow, you know, French fries, much like dough, it's just a canvas for just about anything that you want
100%.
To have. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot about the food. I want to go back to the fact that you really are, you have a liquor license now, you are a bottle shop. What do you like to drink with your poutine, or what are some great classic pairings that you might recommend?
I've been in this industry for a very long time. I've been the wine buyer and done cocktail lists and a lot of different places. My philosophy is always whatever you like to drink, that's what's likely going to be the best pairing. So I would always, if I was trying to guide someone, that's where I would always start. I think that there are some perfect pairings in general with some of the food. You know, honestly, we always carry Duvel on draft. It's a Belgian golden ale. It's classic. We've carried it from day one at each one of our locations. That beer goes with everything. Belgian beer in general is such a great, you know, food beer. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different styles within mm-hmm. Belgian beers, but Duvel in particular is absolutely fantastic. One thing that we actually just started with the new location and put it on the menu is actually champagne and French fries.
I saw that. I was going to ask you about it.
That it, you don't knock it till you try it. That, I mean, also champagne and bubbles go well with nearly everything.
Yeah.
But really, it goes so well with French fries, and you wouldn't normally think. So mm-hmm. Just even our traditional banter poutine would be unbelievable with champagne. But ultimately, you know, yes, we can get more particular about, okay, if there's seafood on, you know, one of the poutines, or if you're having a rich, you know, sausage, you mm-hmm. know, we're really well known for our Polish boy, and our barbecue sauce that we use on top of that is a little tangier with has just a little bit of spice. So I might recommend maybe a Grenache or a Syrah or something that could complement those flavors. So ultimately, I would say choose Duvel, champagne. They go with everything, or just whatever you like to drink in the day-to-day when you're out and about.
I really appreciate hearing the fact that poutine goes with anything that you want to drink. I'm more of a wine drinker than a beer drinker, but I love exploring different beers. And I also really like to ask if I'm someplace new, I like to walk in and I like to say, like, what should I get with this? So tell me a little bit more about some other selections that you might have in your cooler or behind the bar.
We are at both of our locations, both a restaurant and beer and wine store. That was something, you know, again, part of the origin story of Banter. And though we've kind of scaled it back a little bit with the new location. You know, we still carry a couple hundred different wines that are available for here or to go, the same amount for beer as well. What I really love about it is that we're able to really finally curate whatever's on the shelf. You go to a big grocery store and they have a lot of wines that are pushed on them from by big distributors or by wine companies. And I find that a lot of the stuff is sort of junk. I hope that people that come into Banter will trust us, that they know that, oh, they might only have five cabs, but trust me, I've tasted thousands of wines to be able to pick the five best cabs or whatever to put on the shelves. So we always look at our selection for both beer, wine, and our liquor as well as being finely curated, and that no matter what you pick on the shelves, you're going to really, really love it.
I love the enthusiasm that you bring to running this place and the fact that it's all of your food experience and your wine experience and also your experience in, you know, developing neighborhood places that people want to hang out. Matt, I really appreciate talking with you today. I'm so eager to make this a regular stop for myself. And hey, I'm just going to put in a plug. Like we're waiting for one in Brecksville.
In Brecksville. Okay, heard. I think we're going to take a few months, make sure everything's right with the new location, and then maybe we can start thinking about going to the south side of Cleveland.
I love it. Well, I don't know where poutine has been in my life, but I can tell you after talking with you and the enthusiasm and hearing your story and just literally like drooling right now over the descriptions, I think poutine will be in my life. So if you're listening to this and you're feeling the same way, you can learn more about Banter at BanterCleveland.com. Better yet, come over to the new Gordon Square location, 5428 Detroit Avenue. Follow them on Instagram, see what they're featuring. And just remember, there is also, although I believe in crossing the rivers for good food, I believe in going anywhere for good food if you must. You can also patronize the location at the Van Aken District, which is more of a walk-up counter, but you can enjoy all the amenities of the Van Aken District. And you do have a great beer and wine selection there. I've seen it myself with my own eyes. Matt, thanks for being on the CLE Foodcast.
Yeah, my pleasure.
The CLE Foodcast is a project of Fork and the Road Productions, and my sound engineer is Bill Connors. Thanks to Chef Douglas Katz for support. We'd like to remind you that it's time to think about your CSA. There are so many to choose from here in Northeast Ohio, from City Fresh to Ohio City Farm, Barton Farms and Gardens, or Martha's Farm and Front Nine Farm. Wherever you live, there's probably a farmer offering a CSA program that's perfect for you. And thanks to the Cleveland International Film Festival, I'm proud to be a promotional partner of this amazing film fest for another year. The festival runs April 3 through 13th at Playhouse Square. Become a member today. One of the five levels will probably work for you. It's the 48th year of this very special arts event, and you should get to know it like I did. Visit clevelandfilm.org to get started. Well, until the next episode, you know what to do. Stay hungry, be kind, and always, always set a bigger table.